and welcome to the Super Size Phys Ed podcast. I'm your host, Dave Carney, and I teach in Fort Myers, Florida, PE, kindergarten through fifth grade, large groups. And so I have a very special guest for you today. I consider him a friend. I've only met him once, but I've talked to him quite a bit on Voxer and Twitter, and I just think he's an overall outstanding person and outstanding educator. So this is Jorge Rodriguez. Yes, it is him. So Jorge created the Global Phys Ed Voxcast, which I was a part of for a little bit, interviewing people, and he is continuing on as he made a transition with his family from near Houston, Texas, to Saudi Arabia. So we talk about that and lots of other fantastic phys ed things. And so I appreciate you being here today, and I appreciate you listening in. So without further ado, here is Jorge Rodriguez. Right, here I am with the one and only Jorge Rodriguez. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for coming on. I mean, I appreciate it. It's not the same as it used to be when we were an hour difference.
Yeah.
When you're in Texas, can you tell us where you're coming from?
Yeah, things are a little bit different now, right? So I am in Saudi Arabia, and it is 7 in the morning here in Saudi Arabia. And it's a Saturday morning for me, and it's still Friday for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's late Friday night, so we've been working on trying to figure out a good time to talk, and man, I'm so excited. I haven't talked to you in a little while. I mean, not like a deep conversation, so I really appreciate it. So can you tell us real quickly, give me a 2 to 3 minute just bio, who you are. Most people who've listened to these podcasts, your podcast, which I was part of for a little bit there, which I love, the Global Phys Ed Voxcast, love it. And that's where I kind of got my love for podcasting, by the way, and questioning. And so I thank you for that, first of all. So can you give us a quick 2 to 3 minute bio? Who's Jorge Rodriguez?
Well, let's see. 2 minute bio. I am from McAllen, Texas. So I grew up in, born and raised in McAllen, Texas. Went to the University of Houston, lived in Houston for 14, 15 years. And I was a physical education teacher in Houston, pre-K through fifth grade. And just recently now, 6 months ago or so, we moved to Saudi Arabia, and I've been teaching kindergarten PE here in Saudi Arabia. And so that's just a quick, what I've been doing professionally. Obviously, there's all kinds of other stuff going on. Like you said, I've been doing a podcast for, how long has it been now? Three years, maybe? I don't even know.
I would think it's got to be at least three. I would think. Well, yeah. I'm trying to think when we, did we start that before or after the PE Institute 2015 when we met? Was it before?
That's a good question. I can't even remember the whole thing.
I think it was before that we started.
I want to say it was before. But we were just kind of messing around in the beginning and just kind of talking. And it wasn't, I don't know. I don't want to say it wasn't a serious podcast, but it was just like a bunch of us getting on Voxer and interviewing somebody and just kind of chatting.
Yeah.
I had no idea 3 years later we'd be still doing it. So yeah, that's pretty crazy.
What gave you the idea? Because you were the one that originally pitched the idea. We were in a podcast group. I think maybe that's how it started. And we were just talking about Tim Ferriss and Lewis Howes and some good podcasting. But what made you come up with the Voxcast?
Yeah. So I don't remember. We were in a podcast group, and I remember us all talking about how much, how we like these different kinds of podcasts. And then I thought, wouldn't Voxer be a really cool place to have a podcast so we could have voices from all over the world, potentially interviewing somebody on Voxer? And then because Voxer's is set up the way it is, where you can leave a message and somebody can respond, nobody would be talking over each other and that kind of stuff. And everybody could throw in a question or two, and then we'd have a really cool a podcast, right? So we'd have I could take everybody's audio and then just kind of splice it all together. And that's how it started. So I remember the first days. I think it was Spencer Barfus who figured out how to download the each individual message to I think it was like, what is that app called, like Pocket or something like that?
Yeah.
And then you,
yeah.
And then you would have to download it to your computer, and it was a very lengthy process. So I did that for the first podcast. I downloaded each individual message, and then I put it all together into a podcast. And it was really Jared Robinson who I remember talking to him, and he was like, and I'm kind of introverted. I'm not like a big outgoing guy. And so this was something that really, you know, made me step out of my comfort zone. And it was Jared that said, you know, just do it. You're never going to be ready. It's never going to be perfect. You just have to do it. And I thought, you know, why not? Let's do it. See what happens. If it doesn't last, it doesn't last. If it's cool, people listen to it. It's cool and people listen to it. And that's it. And that's the approach I've been taking ever since. You know, if I like the content and people are listening and people see value, let's keep it going.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it. I really did. I know it's hard now and time differences and stuff. So I know you're keeping it going. And I just love the conversations you're having with people. And it was really cool getting to meet new people and just professionals in like all sorts of areas. Mostly PE, but also just education and some different things like the yoga thing. I'm trying to think of like the Cosmic Kid Yoga. I'm just having random, I don't say random people cause she's awesome at what she does, but like people from Go Noodle. Right. I mean like, yeah. Just like,
yeah, just we've really had, cool. we've had authors, we've had people who have done TED Talks. We've had, you know, neuroscientists. We've had all kinds. We had, Dr. John Radion. We had,
Paul Dr. Z.
Ray. We've had all kinds of different people on, right?
Yeah.
People talking about restorative justice. So we've been all over the map. But it all comes back to education. It all comes back to how we could use it in the classroom. So, you know, primarily it's a physical education podcast, and everything is done sort of through that lens. And it always kind of comes back to how we're going to use this, how we're going to use this to become better teachers and, you know, help our students. And ultimately, I mean, I've learned a ton from just talking to these professionals. And this has been, for me, it's been a way to get to have an hour with these people. You know what I mean? So like these experts in the field, people that I would have never even approached. Now I can hit up on Twitter and say, hey, would you be interested in coming on a podcast? And if they say no or they're too busy, then they say no and they're too busy. What have I lost? I haven't lost anything. But if they say yes, I gain these amazing nuggets of knowledge from these people that I could implement in my classroom and in my life right away. And then what the best part is being able to share it with everybody else. So that's really cool. That's what I've really enjoyed about doing this podcast project for the last 3 years or so.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And just the people we've met and the people you've met and things I've learned from just all sorts of people all over the world. I mean, it's been amazing. And even the few people I've interviewed so far, I've learned so much just from little tiny things. It just, yeah. You know, I was telling somebody recently, I didn't know. I interviewed Andy Milne. The podcast isn't out yet, but the app Calm, like Headspace Calm. I don't know if you ever had that, it's free for educators. I guess I didn't even know that. It's like $70 a year, but I'm just like little conversations. I'm like, hey, I didn't know that was free. I guess I should, you know.
I actually read that in his blog, and I downloaded it like right after
there
I read
you go.
His blog.
Yeah.
I downloaded it, and I got the teacher part of it. And I think the caveat is that you have to use it in your classroom at some point.
Yeah.
And I do. So I definitely use some of the shorter with my kindergartners. I've put the audio on like as a closing activity, and I've used some of the shorter. What would you call them? Guided mindfulness things. And they love it. And they really respond to it. And I've taken some of the strategies that they use in some of the meditation exercises and use them in my classroom as well. And so it's a really, really good app. And like you said, if it's free for educators and you use it on occasion in your classroom, it's going to benefit you and it'll benefit your students because now they can self-manage a little bit better.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's just little things like that. Like interviewing Justin Schleider. I mean, we've been playing Schleider ball this past week. You know, I've been asking him, I'm like, how do you play that game? And he told me again. And so just it's just cool just talking to people from all over the place and learning stuff. So what has your social media journey been like? Because I think we came on about the same time. I was on Voxer a little bit before you, but I think you were already involved in some Twitter stuff and other things. So there's my dog, too. That's Peppermint. So what has your social media journey been like?
I think like a lot of people, in the beginning, I was a little reluctant to get on social media. I remember the old like MySpace days. Did you have MySpace?
I never did, actually. My wife got me on Facebook when we were in North Carolina, when we first got married. I'm like, what is this? And no, I don't want to do this. So
Yeah. So I remember a friend of mine in college had a MySpace, and he was like, oh, you got to check it out. It's cool. There's people from all over, you know, you can connect with all these different people. And I was like, okay. So I set up a MySpace, and it was all like glitter and music, and it was just so weird. And I didn't like it. It wasn't for me. But I had a MySpace, and I connected with a few people, and I put some songs on there, but I didn't spend much time on there. I thought this is crazy. What do I need to connect with all these people for, right? And then Facebook came along, and everybody started kind of going to Facebook. And then reluctantly, same thing, I got a Facebook page, but I never really used it. It was just there. I didn't really want to know what was going on in people's everyday life, to the point where it was like, you know, what I'm eating and you know, what I'm drinking, and oh, check out this really cool food restaurant or whatever it is, right? So I wasn't really interested in that. Twitter was the same thing. Like primarily when I first got on Twitter, I was just like checking out news and things like that. I thought it was a really good source for local news and stuff like that, weather, you know, that kind of stuff. And I really wasn't using it for anything else. And then when did I start? I think one of the first people I started following that I remember, you know, being able to get like a PE or like a professional aspect from was Jared Robinson. And so I started following the PE Geek, and he was doing some amazing stuff with like different apps and different technology. And I was always into technology. And then so I figured out, you know, I could use this for professional use. And so that's what I started doing. So I started just using Twitter and some of the other social media platforms for just professional use, right? And then slowly, you know, I learned some stuff. I met some people. I started using hashtags. That FizzEd hashtag is fantastic. There's several hashtags out there that you could follow. And then I started learning about the PE chats and people from all over the world kind of connecting and talking about physical education. And I was like, this is really, really cool. This is it, right? Like I was hooked. And then Boxer came along. And then I met Ben Perillo at a Tayford conference. And I had seen some of his YouTube videos. I was like, hey, you're the guy on YouTube.
Yeah.
I didn't know him before, right? And I was like, you're the dude that does the dances on YouTube. He's like, yeah. and he goes, yeah, there's this app called Voxer. You should check it out. And I go, okay, well, I think I had downloaded it before, but I didn't really know what it was. I didn't really use it, again, for professional use. And then I think he got me on. And then from there, it just exploded. Voxer was a game changer. And now there's still some chats that are still active. But at the time, you know, what was it, a couple years ago, 3 years ago? I mean, it was just blowing up. And all these little subcategories of chats started popping up. And people were talking all the time on Voxer. And that's kind of it in a nutshell, right? So I started off trying to figure out where my place was, and then I figured out how to use it professionally. And then from there, it just exploded.
Yeah, it's been amazing. You reminded me of the first time I ever heard of Twitter. I think was actually I remember this very clearly. It was there was a couple. We were in a small group church setting in North Carolina, and this guy, they're very I don't want to say they're kind of like the yuppie-ish, the couple I'm thinking of, and he just started talking about tweeting and Twitter. I'm like, what? I have no idea what you're talking about, and I don't even know. He was just tweeting his, like you said, like what they're eating for dinner and stuff like that. I'm like, what are you talking? This is like ridiculous. What is this? Yeah. And then, you know, a few years later, I'm like, oh, okay, now I'm starting to understand this. But you're right. I mean, it all started with, I guess for me, somehow I found Jared Robinson and that whole thing snowballed into Twitter and Voxer. And so, yeah, I mean, it was really, it was a game changer, both of those for me, because, you know, I got to meet you and everybody. I mean, I could name hundreds of people that have helped me out either by, you know, even just a quick Vox, like, hey, you guys got any, I don't even know, quick Frisbee games for the morning? You know, it's just something, whatever, you just or help with technology.
Yeah. Know. Yeah. And, you know, that's interesting because I was just talking to Andy Vasily, because that's another one, right? So I got on Andy's blog real early on, and I was at a PYP school, and he was, you know, blogging about PYP stuff. And so I got on his blog real early. And then Joey Fyth, his website also, you know, that was I got on that real early and I started following him really early. But it was interesting because I was talking to Andy the other day and I was telling him a lot of those types of things that were happening, you know, 3 years ago where people were Skyping each other or Google Hangout or whatever it was. And then, you know, recording that and putting it on YouTube or, you know, these little roundtable discussions. I don't see those happening as much anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So I was wanting to create or was wanting to kind of bring back those little roundtable type discussions. I got one in the works right now, and hopefully we can put it out there and make it into a podcast. But I see that almost kind of fading away, and I find myself kind of trying to hold on to it, right?
Yeah.
I don't want that sense of community to start kind of fading away. And that's what brought me to like this physical education community on social media, right? This sense that everybody was like together, was in it, and it was to learn from each other. And for whatever reason, I don't see that as much anymore. Have you noticed the same thing?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I see it on, I think on Twitter, there's still chats, you know, every Tuesday night and every, you know, so I have a hard time with that 'cause that's like putting the kids to bedtime for me, but no, I've noticed that even like on Voxer, definitely slowed down. I don't know. I'm not in the big one anymore because I couldn't keep up. But even some of the little chats, smaller chats, you and I used to be on or still are. It's slowed down. I really don't see that as much. Like you said, those Google Hangouts and stuff like that. Like, I mean, I absolutely. I think you're right. It's more Twitter based or maybe Facebook, like PE Central kind of thing, some Facebook stuff. But
yeah, and I thought that I think that's so important too, like to get everybody's different perspectives on certain topics, you know, and certain these certain topics come up all the time on Twitter and like social media, and people might chime in with a tweet or something, but you know, 240 characters or something, it's not enough really to get your thoughts out. And these longer discussions are I think really important, but like I said, I don't, maybe I'm just not a part of those anymore, but I don't see them as prevalent anymore.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I think it is important we need to keep having these conversations because, who was I telling the other day? I was telling Mike Giannicola, I interviewed him, but I was talking to him about. I think even off air, I guess, I was in a professional development last week and most of in my district, and it was a lot of, I'm the only one in the room, I think, that was when they were talking about dodgeball. I mean, like they were all like, and I'm not, this isn't a dodgeball discussion necessarily, but they were talking a lot about dodgeball and relay races and things, kickball. And I don't mind like 5-on-5 kickball, but they were talking about a lot of old school stuff, and I'm like, I'm like kind of biting my tongue here. But most of them are not on social media; they're on that island that I used to be on and try not to be on. And you know, I was very my first 2 years, especially I was very I guess ignorant as to I want to say best practices and things that are going on around the world. I mean, not that everything's best practice that you see on social media, but I didn't know what I didn't know. So I'm not sure if that's still going on. It must be because I was like biting my tongue for a couple hours, I think.
Yeah. And then that's interesting too, because it seems like there's these different levels, right? Of people and how they kind of view the profession. And like you mentioned, that PE Central Facebook page, sometimes there's like amazing things on that PE Central page. But just the other day I got on it, and I sometimes even try to avoid it because there's a lot of, you know, sometimes those dodgeball talks,
yes,
and some of the stuff that's posted, it's like, what? Why would you post stuff like that? But the other day I was on it, and somebody was asking what the best way is to grade their fitness testing, you know? And I was like, oh my gosh, like, why do we keep running in circles here?
Yeah.
And regardless of all these articles that are coming out about how people, you know, viewed physical education when they were younger and how now that influences their thought of physical activity as an adult, mm-hmm, and how they hated it, we still keep doing the same thing over and over again, and we don't evolve as a profession. And so that's why I think these conversations are really important, so that people get a different perspective of what physical education could be. And I mean, that was a big thing for me, because and I know I've said this before on my podcast and different podcasts, when I first got into teaching, you know, I was a PE teacher, and I was the roll out the ball PE teacher, right? And the kids wanted to play soccer, and so we played soccer like every day, and I was out there playing with them. And after a couple of years, I thought, this is not what I signed up for. Like I wasn't feeling fulfilled. You know, 70% of the kids were happy, but there were 30% that hated it. And I wasn't doing my job. I wasn't taking it seriously. And I thought this was what PE was, right? And so I was ready to quit. I was ready to do something else. I didn't want to be a teacher anymore. And it wasn't until I got around different people with different perspectives that really showed me what PE could be. And, you know, my friend Darlene Evans and at the time, Dr. Santiago from Houston ISD, he was a PE manager at the time. You know, they really brought me in and said, well, this could be a lot better. Like, you could actually, you know, do these different activities, you know, have these different, take a look at the Texas standards and kind of base things off of the Texas standards, and showed me how to unpack some of those standards, and really showed me how to bring the education into physical education, right? So it wasn't just a bunch of activities with nothing behind them, and I really started looking at the perspective of my kids and seeing, you know, what I could do to maximize their experience in PE. And that was the beginning of my journey, right? And that was the beginning of how I could change this around and really start looking into like the effective domain and not having it all be, you know, the psychomotor stuff. There's other aspects to why people participate in physical activity, and it's not just all about the skill level. So it's definitely important, like I said, to get those different perspectives and have these conversations so that people can take that and then possibly, you know, adjust the way they teach or they approach physical education and their students.
Yeah, no, exactly. I just, the gap between, I don't know. I mean, I know we're not going to all look the same. Not every science teacher is going to teach the exact same thing, or math teacher the exact same way as everybody else in the whole world. But I think the gap between, I don't even know, like 1980s PE and what I consider, I guess, this century PE, I don't know. I think there's a big gap between, they don't necessarily have to be on social media, but I don't even know. Some of the old school teaching and the, I guess, the newer PE teaching, you know, I'm not saying I'm 100% right in everything I teach or it's always perfect, but I don't know. I feel like we're constantly trying to, you know, get that stereotype out of the way of what PE used to be compared to what it should be. And it's just, it's a constant battle because my wife, I didn't know this. Like, I loved PE. I loved dodgeball when I was a kid. I loved all this stuff. I didn't know until this is like maybe a year or two ago. I mean, we haven't played dodgeball in about 4 or 5 years, but my wife was like, you know, I hated dodgeball. I hid behind the poles. I pretended to have, you know, I was sick. You know, it was just like, I didn't know any better because I never experienced that as a kid. But there are a lot of people I would think like her that had, like you said, you know, these negative you know, feelings towards PE that now grow up and they're like, well, I don't want to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, my wife is the same way. I mean, my wife was like the super athlete in high school, you know? She did every sport, you know, varsity in every sport. She ran track in college. And we've had this conversation, and she was like, I hated dodgeball. Like, they would play dodgeball, you know, as in high school or whatever, probably in middle school because she was always in athletics. But she's like, I hated it because I didn't want people throwing things at me. And I can totally see it. Like, she was probably the best athlete in the school, but yet she hated people throwing stuff at her. And I totally get it. And I see that, you know, I had the conversation with my kids back in Houston, and obviously I've been teaching kinder now, and we're not, you know, touching that subject with, you know, throwing dodgeballs. They don't ask for it, I should say, right?
Right.
At my old school, they would ask every now and then, well, why can't we play dodgeball? Because they're, you know, they played it after school, or they played it, you know, at some other activity that they might do. But they would ask me, like, why can't we play dodgeball? And we would break it down. And so I would put it back to them. I go, okay, let's break down the aspects of dodgeball. And why wouldn't we play that in PE class? So what do you do in dodgeball? You intentionally throw something at somebody else. And when you intentionally throw something at somebody else, you're hitting them with that object. So are we allowed to hit people in PE class? Well, no. Should we be hitting people with stuff in any part of school? Well, no. Okay, so we're not going to that point, right? We can play other activities where you're practicing throwing, where you're practicing all these other things. But if you're thinking about the moral development of the child, and you're confusing the kid with some rules apply here and some rules don't apply in other aspects at an early age, I think that hurts that development. And so if a student is allowed to throw things and hit people in PE class, but then they go out to the playground and all of a sudden that's not allowed, or then they go, you know, they're in math class and they're sitting at their desk and you don't throw things at people, you know, all of a sudden that's not allowed, then you're confusing those rules that they need a solid understanding of when they're at that younger stage, right? I could see maybe when they've developed and they're in high school and maybe they have a better understanding of how, you know, some of these things work. I still think it's kind of tricky. And I'm of the opinion of, you know, you have to try to eliminate some of those gray areas, because a lot of people say that, well, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. There's these gray areas. So as much as we can, we have to try to eliminate those gray areas so that people understand, or our students understand, that this is what's expected of you in this particular community. And I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I think there's so many other alternatives to playing a game where you're throwing something at somebody else, and in many, many instances, inflicting pain, right? So there's so many other things that you could do to help with the overhand throw or dodging or whatever skill people might be trying to do. And then again, breaking it down with your students and unpacking what the objective of the game actually is, they understand, like, you know what, we could do something else. We don't always have to play dodgeball. And in fact, I might not even like playing dodgeball because I don't really want somebody throwing stuff at my head either. Right. You know?
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. So tell us about, I'm going to totally change subjects for a moment here, but you know, when I was in the early stage of the Voxcast, I always said, I want to interview Jorge because you always interview everybody else. And I really want to interview you. So, it was really surprising when you told us all, at Voxer, that's where I originally heard it, that you were moving to Saudi Arabia from Texas. I mean, I guess the heat, but, it's maybe somewhere, I don't even know, but can you tell us kind of how that played out? Like, I mean, with your family, and then, you know, why, and just how it's been going and the differences and the similarities. I know it's a lot of questions there, but just your transition, you know, why you made the transition and, you know, how's it going and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So, I guess on the podcast, I had done a international teachers podcast, and I had all these different international teachers from all over the place. It was, Adam was on there, Mel, Lika, Daniel, all these different people. Andy was on there, all these different people, and giving their perspectives of how they decided to take the jump, and then, you know, how things were going for them. And ever since then, I had this like itch. I had this like idea of, you know, what if we did that? Like, would I be able to do that? And then out of the blue, I got a Vox from Andy Vasily, and he said, okay, this might sound crazy, but just listen. And I was like, okay, here it comes. And he said, well, there's this P position that just opened up. Would you consider applying for it in Saudi Arabia? And obviously the first thing I thought was, there's no way I'm moving to Saudi Arabia. There's no way. So I messaged him back and I was like, thanks, I appreciate it, but I'm not moving to Saudi Arabia. And then we just kept kind of messaging each other back and forth. And he was like, well, just, you know, consider it, because this is what the package looks like. This is, you know, how we've adjusted to Saudi Arabia. We really love it here, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then, so slowly I was kind of, you know, thinking about it and thinking, you know, it took a couple of days and I thought, yeah, why not? Like, we only live once, and I'd love to experience, you know, another culture and another country. And you know, I think I could do it. And then so I approached my wife with it, and I said, you know, Andy was thinking that we might be a good fit, and we should apply to go to Saudi Arabia. And she was like, no way, we're going to Saudi Arabia. So we went through all that again, right? And it took her a little while to kind of think about it and say, you know what, why not? Let's do it. So same thing, you know, and we talked to our kids about it. And my daughter was on board, and my son was kind of like, no, I don't want to leave. And so I applied. So I said, well, it's not 100%. I still have to apply and go through the whole process, and I might not even get the job. So let me just apply, put my name in the hat, and see what happens. And I applied. I did the interviews, which is a pretty lengthy interview process. And they offered me the job. And I said, okay, I'm not going to accept it yet. So we talked a lot, you know, as a family about, you know, the potential of moving, the opportunities, and everything else. And finally we decided, like, let's do it. And if it doesn't work out, then we're back in a couple of years. But if it does work out, then we have all these different doors open for us. And so far it's been amazing. Like, I'm really glad that we decided as a family that we would take this jump, because it's really opened my eyes to, again, I think perspective is really important, right? Having a perspective that is open to other people's perspectives, and living here and seeing all the different cultures and where everybody's coming from, and the differences and the similarities and everything else, has really opened my eyes to, you know, how people live around the world. And I think it's really important for my kids to experience that too.
Yeah.
So far it's been amazing. We've been able to travel. We've met people from all over the world. We've developed friendships from people all over the world, and it's been fantastic.
That's awesome. Seriously, that's just, you know, when we moved from North Carolina to Florida, that was a big deal. Like, I can't imagine just whole nother, you know, around the world. But it's really neat.
You know what?
Go ahead.
So I do want to say also, like, it. Because you're, you know, because of the ability to travel and going to these different countries that I've been to, it really gives you an appreciation of what you have. I mean, for us in Houston, in the United States, in Texas, like, it gives you this appreciation that, and hopefully my kids are getting this as well, of the things that you have in the United States. You know, because the things that you take for granted, other places, they don't have those things, right? And so it really gives you a really deep appreciation to be able to see what it's like. Because you hear it, you might see it in a movie, but to experience it in real life, it's like, wow, this is something special. You know?
Yeah, it reminds me of, I think I saw you on Instagram, one of your posts, was it yesterday or something, with like a camel in the back of a car or something. It was something like, yeah. Like, I'm just like, wow, Jorge's living a different lifestyle. I mean, I've seen you, all of a sudden you're at the, you know, the pyramids in Egypt, and yeah. You know, just, that's amazing, you know, all that travel experience.
Yeah, it's been amazing. But yeah, that camel was just kind of cruising in the back of a pickup truck.
Not something you see in Houston, right?
No, definitely not.
That's awesome. So I have questions for you. I don't even know where to go from there. There's a camel in the back of a truck. All right. So
yeah, I was actually, me and Andy went to Kuwait to do a little PD over there. He was running a workshop over there, and I kind of helped him out. And we were heading to the airport, and I tapped him on the shoulder, and I was like, check it out. And there was a little pickup truck with a camel in the back. And so I snapped a couple pictures, and that's one of them that I got. It was actually a pretty cool picture because the sun was setting, the camel was cruising, and there was like a mosque in the background. It's a really cool picture. But yeah, I posted that to Instagram because I thought this is too cool.
That's awesome. Really, that was awesome. So I know at least one of these people, Andy Vassily, is going to be the answer to at least part of this question. Because he's amazing. I've learned so much from him, and getting to meet him finally and talking to him, I just think he's a great guy. So along with him, and you could talk about him as well, who are some of your mentors in either in the PE field or elsewhere that you really have learned from in the past whatever in your lifetime?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I mean, definitely Andy, right? And so now I'm working closely with Andy, and I've been learning from him for so long. And he's a great guy. His family's amazing. Let's see. That's a good question. And I hate to kind of like kind of run around this question, but, you know, going back to the podcast, I mean, there's been so many people that I've talked to in the past 3 years that I've learned from. And I think one of the things that I've learned is that everybody has, you know, a story, and everybody has something significant to contribute. And so, I mean, I've talked to plenty of PE teachers out there, and I learned something from each and every one of them. And then I've talked to, you know, experts in certain fields, and obviously I've learned a ton from them. And so it's hard to pinpoint like one person or one, you know, a group of people that I would consider mentors, because I learn really from everybody. And, yeah. And like I said, doing this podcast, it's like you get to sit down with somebody and talk to them for an hour or sometimes even longer, and you get to pick their brain. And it's amazing because everybody really has something to contribute.
All right. That was a good answer. I got to admit, that was a good one. All right. Let's move on to some PE specific things here. Right. So first of all, what is your, because you used to teach, was it kindergarten through fifth or sixth in Texas?
Yeah, pre-K through fifth.
Pre-K. Okay. So what is it like now just having kindergarten, and what does a typical class look like time-wise? You know, just give me, you know, what does it look like now for you over there?
Yeah. So I have 12 kindergarten classes. Biggest class is 15. So it's really nice. So nice. Let's see, the shift has been, at first it was really difficult because I always really kind of thought I was better with like the older kids, third, fourth, and fifth. And so I did a lot of stuff with them. And the younger kids, you know, although I enjoyed my time with them, I didn't do a lot of like in-depth things with them, right? And so now really being able to focus on one developmental level has been huge. Like at first it was difficult. I had to figure out not only how I fit into this new culture, but like how to navigate all these little guys trying to run all over the place, right? and using that energy like to try to focus that energy and using it for learning, right? That was difficult. But I learned quickly. I think I learned quickly. And one of the great things about here is also that Andy, his position is a pedagogical coach. And so he comes in and he observes my class and he'll take notes for me, and we'll have conversations about, you know, his observations and the observations that I wanted him to take for me. And then we'll make decisions from that. And so he really helps me, you know, not only like plan out and timeline my units, but also like specific things. And so in the beginning of the school year, I thought, well, I need a lot of help with this, with classroom management. And not that my kids were crazy, but I had a couple I had a couple classes that were more challenging than others, right?
Oh, yeah.
And right away, we figured out, you know, specific strategies to use for these classes and set up the gym in a more, you know, learning conducive environment. And we started fixing those little problems that went a long way. And then for me, I think it was important to start having a mindset of more play-based mindset, right? So instead of having this idea of these kids doing a specific task or leading them towards a specific task, you know, allowing them the room to kind of play and explore, and then reflecting on the learning that happened when they're in those little exploration stages. So that's what I've really, really started doing more of. So not staying too rigid to the lesson plan, but allowing myself and the kids more flexibility to kind of move and explore and you know, lead themselves through these certain tasks and things and see what's best for them. So that was a big mind shift for me, you know, where I had to kind of learn how to play a little bit more. But so far it's been great. I mean, I've really enjoyed it, and these kids are awesome. Because one of the things I love about Kinder also is that they don't have a filter. They just say whatever they want to say. And I told this story. I think I was talking to and Aaron Beagley, and I was giving an explanation of these activities that we were doing, and one kid kind of raises their hand, and I was like, "Yeah, do you want to say something?" And she goes, "This is so boring." And I was like, "Okay." Like, I thought, you know, I could take this two ways. One, I could get upset and say, "Well, that's rude. You shouldn't say that." Or two, I could take a little bit from that and say, "You know what? I have been talking way too long, and these kids want to be active. They want to do something. They want to play, and I'm taking that away from them. And I'm saying you have to sit here and listen to me." And so I thought about that, and I was like, "You know, you're right. I've been talking way too long. Let's get up and let's do something." So we got up and we danced or did whatever we did. Right? But yeah, I mean, they have no filter. They say exactly what's on their mind.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, how long do you how long's your class periods with kindergarten?
Oh, I see twice a week for 45 minutes.
Oh, great. Hmm. 12. You have 12. Is it a huge school? What does it go up to? What is your school like?
So I'm in the kindergarten, so it's K-1 through K-3. So 3 and 4 year olds is K-1, 4 and 5 is K-2, and then I'm K-3, which is 5 and 6 year olds. And then they move up to the elementary from there. So we have like a separate school just for kindergarten.
Gotcha. So do you, one of my favorite words these days is choice. How do you incorporate choice with students? I mean, especially at the kindergarten age, and not just, you know, obviously not just roll out the ball and say go, but give them specific guidelines and like, how does that look in your class?
Yeah. So obviously different for the different skills or the different activities that we're doing. But, the one I can think of right off the bat is, if we're working on tossing and catching, right. Or, you know, tossing with a partner, if I would have different items that they could try. So let's say, you know, you toss 5 times and then your partner's turn to toss 5 times and they can go and choose, you know, a big ball, a smaller ball, maybe a scarf or a handkerchief, right? Maybe a reaction ball, whatever that might be, to give them a choice of the different items. And then I want you to try each of those items and tell me which one is easier for you, because everybody's going to have a different opinion. And so that's one way that you can incorporate choice really easily. So instead of everybody having this, you know, one big playground ball, they have a choice to try different things. And then that automatically differentiates as well, right? So if you're a little bit more skilled and you want to use a tennis ball to toss it up and catch it, that's fine. But if you need a bigger playground ball, then that's okay too. So everybody tries to find, you know, that little just right challenge for themselves. Another thing that I've been doing, if we do stations, so, you know, we sometimes we'll do stations, sometimes we'll do a group activity, sometimes we'll do, you know, different teaching strategies. Mm-hmm. But let's say we're doing stations and we have four different stations at each corner of the gym. I asked them which station was their favorite. So for instance, right now we're working on physical well-being. And so we have four different stations that have them experience the five components of fitness, or four of the five components of fitness. And so then I'll ask them which one was their favorite, and we'll keep two of those stations. So the next time I see them for that particular week, right, we'll keep the two favorite stations. So one, we had station number one this last week, right? We had this hanging station where they got to hang on a bar, and they had to hang, they had to like lift themselves up and hang for 10 seconds. And then the next person would go hang on a bar and so on. And they loved that station. They absolutely loved that station. And so we kept it. So the following time, the next time I saw them, we kept that hanging station. And that gives them also a contribution to what's going to be the stations that are going to be chosen for the next time we see them, right? So that gives them a choice as well. And so at the end, you know, we'll get them together and I'll ask them, just tell me the number, which one you liked. Or sometimes we even do magnets, and I have a board, and they tell me with their magnets which ones they liked as an exit ticket.
Awesome.
And that's another way that we can kind of build that autonomy and the choice and have them contribute to the planning of the activity. So even in kindergarten, you know, they have a say in what's going to happen next.
I think that's great. I do. I think that's amazing how we can incorporate even in kindergarten, just that little bit of choice, even and give them a say in what we're doing and what they're doing and how they're learning. I think that's amazing. So
real quickly, just another thing that I do, and when I have them, you know, sort of explore different ways of throwing or different ways of doing an activity, I ask them, you know, feel it out. Like, this might be one way of doing it, an underhand throw, but feel it out and see what's best for you. Use your right hand, use your left hand, use both hands, go behind your back, go under your leg. It doesn't matter to me. You tell me what feels best for you. And that's another way of just really simply giving them the responsibility of choosing, you know, what's right for them.
Yeah, I think that's great. So kindergarten, though, is kindergarten is kindergarten. And I have like 100 something at a time, so it's not always easy. So what's a good management technique for kindergartners or any grade level? Is there anything specific you do to start a class or end a class? Something that gets them on task.
Well, okay. So for me, it's going to be way different than for you, right?
It's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
Because I have 15 and you have 115.
Something like that, yeah.
I have no idea how you do that. But but for me, you know, I have a very specific routine when they come in. I kind of borrowed this idea from Jill Connell, where she has this idea of a magic door. When kids walk into a classroom, they have, you know, some sort of a interesting entryway. And so I've taken that idea and made it like a physical entrance to my gym. And so sometimes, like right now, we have hula hoops on the floor, and as they come in, they hop into the gym, and then we have a meeting place in the middle. So we have our class meeting in the middle. Sometimes I'll put a tunnel. Sometimes I'll put little blocks where they can balance, and I say, oh, you know, don't fall into the lava type of thing. And they have to walk into the gym. And everything is some sort of a play or imaginative experience. So when they hop in, you know, they're turning into kangaroos as they come into the gym. They turn into lizards, and they have to crawl on the mats, you know, do a crawl on the mats, things like that. So as they come in, they go to our class meeting in the middle, and we always do that. And then I tell them what to do next. If I change anything, I'll change one aspect of it. So right now, like I said, we're doing physical well-being. And I have these exercise buckets like all around the gym. So now what I'm changing is, as they come in, instead of going to the meeting place, they go straight to the exercise bucket and they get started right away. And so they get started right away, and then I bring them back to our meeting area. And from the meeting area, at that point, we talk about what just happened. Like, what did we just experience? And so right now we talk about, you know, how our heart beats faster when we exercise, when we do some sort of physical activity. So I tell them all the, you know, you have to be quiet and you have to, you know, listen, feel your heart. And they feel their heart and see the changes that occurred in their heart. Or we might talk about, you know, what's going to happen next. And then we go into the activity. So then I'll explain the activity, or I'll take them through the stations, and then I let them go. So really, in the first, they come in, and I try to be as brief as possible. So in the first minute of class, they're active, they're doing something, and then we come back and we talk about what just happened. So it's always linked to the objective of the class or the concept that we're trying to hit. And then each of those stations or the activity that we're doing, again, is linked somehow to the concept that you know we're trying to hit for that particular class. And then at the end, we always have some sort of an exit ticket as well. I ask them, you know, what their favorite station was, or, you know, how they were feeling when they were participating with their friends or things like that. And typically we'll either put the magnets on the board to give me an idea of how, like a snapshot of how the class went or how the class felt. And what I've been doing recently is I'll ask them, what is one thing that you can do today to, you know, make somebody happy? Or what is one thing that you can do today to improve your physical fitness? So, you know, something like that. And so as they line up, they answer the question, they line up, and then they get ready to go. So that's typically how, you know, a class routine or the class typically goes. And, you know, I'll throw in some mindfulness on occasion. I'll throw in, you know, different activities like that to help them kind of learn strategies to self-regulate. But that's typically how a class would go.
Yeah, I love that. I love the how they come in, especially because now you got me thinking about how I can do that with 100 plus kids. But I could probably do that with a bunch of hula hoops and different pathways or something like that. There's a chance I could do that. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. I think that's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, and they really enjoy it.
Yeah, I love kindergarten. It's funny because I feel the same way. I know you mentioned earlier about, like, I feel like I'm better at third, fourth, fifth. That's just me. I feel like I hate to say it, but I feel like I enjoy it more because I could, you know, we're like right now in fifth grade, we're doing our annual sport ed chook ball unit. And, you know, that's like my favorite thing to do, you know, the TGFU stuff. So I know you can't do really TGFU, maybe the basic concepts, but not units and, or maybe not. I don't know. Can you bring some of that stuff down that you love so much? Like, or have you?
I mean, definitely with the questioning and things like that. Like understanding, you know, even kindergarten, giving them open-ended questions is really important to have them start thinking. So things like that, aspects like that, definitely. Yeah, you could still use with, you know, some of those different strategies. But yeah, I couldn't do like a whole invasion games unit because it wouldn't work out that way. But you know what's cool? You know what the hardest thing I think is with teaching all those different developmental stages from pre-K to fifth grade is shifting yourself from those developmental stages, right? So in kindergarten, I have a mindset of play all day long, and it's easier. Because now I can be that kindergartner all day. But when I have one kindergarten class, then my next class is a fourth grade class, and my next class is a first grade class, it's hard to shift and say, okay, I have to have the mindset of play for this class. But then the next class, you know, they've developed to their developmental stage is a little bit different. So now I have to shift my mindset and get ready for my fifth grade class because they're not going to be the same. I can't ask them to hop into the gym, or maybe I could, I don't know, but I can't ask them to hop into the gym and pretend like they're kangaroos. They might not, you know, appreciate that as much as the kindergartners. I mean, maybe some of them would, right? But maybe some of them wouldn't. But the shifting of mindset for the teacher is difficult too.
Yeah, no, today it's funny you said that because you've probably seen that. I think I showed you that video one time of my class doing the, we bring out the sharks, like bring out, we have those big stuffed sharks, those big, and if with kindergarten and sometimes first grade, we'll bring them out, we'll hand them out to like, we have six of them and we'll do like a song and then like a short song and then they'll pass them out to some of the friends and, you know, some other kids will come up. So today, I don't know why I decided I was going into my, it was right after lunch and we had third grade coming out and I had, I don't know why I just brought out one of those sharks or I pretended to kind of hide it from them and stick it out the door. And they were just like, what? they were like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. So then I played I played baby shark and it's funny cause they actually got into it cause it's so like built for kindergarten. But third graders were actually singing Baby Shark, and it was funny.
Yeah.
But I handed out one of the sharks to one of the kids, and they're like, "What are you doing?" And my son was out there, and he's like, "This is ridiculous, Dad."
And sometimes that's a good thing, right? Sometimes it's a good thing to just be like, "Okay, we're just gonna be silly today," and they'll respond to that. But again, like they're shifting to a mindset of or a developmental stage of where their peers and the acceptance of their peers and their peer groups is becoming more and more important, right? Mm-hmm. So at a younger stage, they want to please that authority figure, the adult, and then they shift into the stage where that doesn't matter to them anymore, right? They want to please their peers, and if that's not cool to their peers, then they're not playing Baby Shark.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's hard to kind of shift that idea being a certain way with one group of kids, and then the next class is going to be completely different.
Oh yeah, I actually did that one time with fifth grade, and of course a lot of the boys were like, "This is dumb," but some of the girls were. I was just doing it to be silly. It was just like one of those. Here's your warm up for the day. Just do Baby Shark, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, just to mess around with them. So just interesting. So do you have a? I don't know. Like I learned a couple new games from Justin. Do you have any, it doesn't have to be a new game, but do you have a fun warm-up or go-to game that you like to play with the kindergartners? I'm always looking for kindergarten stuff.
Every game that I play, I try to build in sort of a sense of community in the game. So if somebody's helping somebody, all my games are everybody's it. Like if we play a tag game, everybody's it. Recently we played what was it called? I guess we called it Turtle Tag. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what we called it. But recently we played Turtle Tag, and the kids were crawling around like little turtles. And if they got tagged, then they had to flip over on their back, and there were a turtle on their back. And then anybody can help anybody. So if you were helping somebody, you couldn't get tagged, right? So somebody would kind of push them over gently, you know, and then help them flip over. And then anytime somebody helps you, you have to say thank you. So somebody would flip you over, you say thank you, and then you keep on playing the game. And then if you didn't want to be tagged, you would get into your turtle shell. And you can be in your turtle shell for 5 seconds. And the kids absolutely loved it. I don't know how they stayed crawling for so long, but they absolutely loved it. They're crawling around, tagging each other, helping each other out, saying thank you, getting in their little turtle shells, and it was great. And then so when the time was up, what's great about that game too is that, you know, you have this automatic like attention getter, which is getting to your turtle shells, right? And then you're in your turtle shell, you're quiet, you know, you're trying to hide because you're in your turtle shell. So when we got everybody back together to move on to the next activity, I asked them really quickly to get into their turtle shells, and all you know, 15 kids at the same time get into their little turtle shells. And now I have all their attention. So it has like a built-in attention getter as well. And then we can transition to the next activity by crawling like turtles to the next activity. So it really builds in this idea of imagination. And actually it's a tie-in also to the planners that they're doing in their classrooms, because right now they're looking at living things and how living things, you know, systems and living things work. And so pretending like you're a turtle gives you that sort of imaginative mindset that will also kind of transfer to the classroom. So yeah, that's a fun one that we played just recently.
Yeah, I like that. Now, are you, because I'm on cement, are you inside? Are you in a gym floor kind of thing or no?
Yeah. So the gym floor is like a soft rubber.
Okay. And I don't know if I could do turtle tag on cement. I might get some concussions or something. But I do like that though.
Maybe on the grass.
I was thinking that. Actually, I was thinking that. We got some. that's pretty good.
So another one that I play that you don't have to be on the ground is the hand clap tag. I call it hand clap tag. It's just a game, like a name that just popped into my head. But anyway, so everybody is it. Same premise. Everybody's it. If you get tagged, you're frozen. And I ask them to put one hand up if they're frozen, so everybody knows that they're frozen. And then anybody can help anybody. So I play this in builds also. So the first build is anybody can play help anybody. And so if somebody comes up to you to try to help you, you play one round of the hand clap game. So you clap, right hand clap, left hand clap, both hands, and then you're free. If you're helping somebody, you can't get tagged, right? And then they play that for a minute or two. And then I add a new rule. So the new rule is if you want to unfreeze yourself, you'd have to do the chicken dance. And so if you're frozen, you do the chicken dance. And then the next rule, then I add a new rule to that game. And this is when we were talking about rules, right? So they have to follow the rules and the importance of following the rules and everybody playing the same game and that kind of thing. So then the new rule after that is a base. So then I have two bases, and if you're in base, you have to do five jumping jacks, and you have to get out of base. And so everybody's skipping around, everybody's tagging each other. They have a way to help somebody else. If somebody helps you, you have to say thank you again. And then they also have a way to unfreeze themselves if they have to. So it that's a fun game. And again, it kind of I tell them beforehand, I want to see how many people you can help. So I always want you to look around and see if there's somebody that you can help. And if you're safe, I want you to try to help somebody. And so I kind of set that, you know, put that little seed into their mind and say, you know, you always want to look out for people that you can help.
How do you keep active in Saudi Arabia or with your family? Like, I know you travel, but like, is there anything physically you've been doing to stay in shape or stay active? Or I know running around with kindergartners is probably good enough, but you know.
Yeah, well, that does give you your steps. I'm after a long day, I'm usually, you know, at like 18,000 steps or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are so many options here in the compound to stay active. Like me and my wife used to go and play ultimate frisbee, and so we did that for a while, and then she started playing in the orchestra here, and I found a group that does jiu-jitsu here, so I did that for a while.
Yeah,
and I hurt my hand. I actually hurt my hand, so I've been out for like a month. And then I play on the basketball team here. So we have like a little faculty basketball team. So I've been playing basketball once or twice a week. Nice. I also play on the volleyball team. So there's a group of, I used to coach volleyball here. So there's a group of students that wanted to form a team. And I was like, yeah, I'll play. They asked me. And so I play on the volleyball team. And then I just started taking golf lessons.
Awesome.
So I also do a little bit of golf. So I'm not very good yet, but I'm taking the lessons and I'm trying to figure out how to play a little bit. We have a golf course here on the compound. It's a beautiful golf course. And so I was like, I should probably take advantage of that.
Andy posts every picture Andy posts, he's on the golf course. So you have to learn, right?
That guy's on the golf course all the time. He is always on the golf course. Him and his son are like obsessed with golf. So that's cool. So yeah, at some point I have to actually get out there. So he asked me the other day, he's like, yeah, let's go play around, 'cause we have a nine hole golf course here. And I was like, well, you know, 'cause he's like the golf course champion, like his name is up on a plaque, right? Of winning some tournament here. And I was like, before I play with the champion, I need to practice a little bit. So I'm not there yet. So at some point I'll get out there and actually play around. But right now I'm trying to figure out my swing. It's a difficult game.
It is. I love golf, but I just, for me, it's hard because, you know, it's like 5 hours away from my family or four and a half or whatever. But now that my son's getting a little older, he's enjoying a little more. So I'll take him out at least to the small, like, you know, there's one that's really small. It's got like it's a nine hole course, but I'm telling you, like the longest hole is like, you know, 35 yards. So it's like, you know, it's all I have to do is bring my pitching wedge and a putter. But he enjoys it. And, you know, it's got a putt-putt course there and it's got some other things, driving range. So, it's good. 'Cause I love it. I love golf. I just can't, I don't do it as much as I like to.
I played a couple times, you know, back home, but we would just kind of mess around and hit balls all over the place. So now I'm actually taking lessons to try to figure out how to play the game. So,
oh yeah, it's a tough game. It's funny because, you know, playing baseball, you know, balls coming in at, you know, I've never played at a super high level, but you know, ball's coming in, it's curving and it's whatever. And this ball is just sitting still. A golf ball is not even moving. It's so difficult.
That is really difficult. So that's right. Another thing. So there's going to be a softball, like, I guess, tournament coming up pretty soon. So I think we're going to start practicing softball.
Nice.
And then like a month ago, we had a flag football tournament in Jeddah. So me and my wife and a bunch of guys went out there and played a flag football tournament in Jeddah. American football, right?
Yeah.
So that's cool. So there's so many opportunities here to be active, and it's actually hard trying to pick which ones you want to do on which day and stay, you know, I keep getting hurt. I keep hurting my hand. So and try to stay healthy.
There you go. Stay healthy for your kids. All right. So a couple more for you. Can you, or have you listened to any new, cause you know, I love podcasts and I know you do too. Have you listened to anything new recently, podcasts or any new apps or any new books, anything new on that side of things that you want to throw out there for the phys ed community or just for me? I don't care.
Let's see, podcast wise. I think my favorite all time podcast is Radiolab. So there's a few new Radiolabs that came out that were really good. There was one. Are you a hockey fan? You're a hockey fan.
Yeah. Too? Yeah. Buffalo Sabres.
There's one I listened to recently. It's called, I have it right here, The Punchline. And it's about, let me tell you the guy's name. You might recognize him. John Scott. Have you heard of John Scott?
I'm not sure. I haven't followed hockey. I'm not as much as I used to.
So John Scott was one of these guys who was, I guess, like an enforcer type of guy.
I was
going to
say enforcer. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I don't know anything about hockey, but he was one of those tough guys that would like fight all the time. Mm-hmm. And I guess one time the NHL decided that that they were going to limit the fans on the people that they could pick for the All-Star game or something like that. And the internet went crazy and they voted this guy into the All-Star game as a captain. And the controversy that went with that was amazing.
I think, but I remember that. Yeah.
He ended up playing, and so I won't give away the ending. You got to check it out.
Right.
I think you would really enjoy it.
What's it called? I'm writing this on Punchline.
It's called Punchline. The episode is called Punchline on Radiolab. It's a great
story. Oh, it's on Radiolab. Okay. Yeah.
It's a great story. I think you would enjoy it. And if you're a hockey fan, I think you'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mostly, I still follow hockey a little bit, but I mean, mine was more back in the 80s and 90s when I actually lived in Buffalo and it was right there in front of me. It's not as much here, a little bit, but not as much.
Yeah. I'm not a big hockey fan. I never really followed it, but I thought that was a really good one that I just listened to the other day. Another podcast that I really have enjoyed is a podcast called Philosophize This.
I've heard of that. Is that Gimlet Media again or no?
No, it's different? Not Gimlet. Okay. Yeah, it's different. Some guy that talks about philosophy, which is really cool. He breaks down a lot of the big thinkers in philosophy, which I'm a fan of. So nice. That's a good one. I guess that's it with new podcasts and, you know, some of the old ones that we've always kind of listened to.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Gimlet stuff. I can't think of anything else on that end. Book wise, the recent book that I read or listened to on Audible, I'm a big fan of Audible. I love Audible.
Mm-hmm.
But the recent one that I listened to that I thought was really good was The Coddling of the American Mind by Jonathan Haidt. So Jonathan Haidt also wrote The Happiness Hypothesis and I forget the other book that he wrote. But it's pretty good. It's a really good book, and it talks about the main premise, anyway, is that there's these three untruths or these three like big untruths that people have. And one of them is the untruth of fragility, that, you know, that if it doesn't kill you, it makes you weaker. And so the opposite is true, right? So we are actually anti-fragile, and our kids and our students are actually anti-fragile, and we need those little challenges in our life in order to become stronger. And that's actually a good thing. And then the other untruth is the emotional reasoning that always you should always trust your feelings. And sometimes the reality is, you know, and especially thinking about biology and how your brain works, sometimes you have to calm yourself down before you trust those feelings, right? You can't always react to those feelings. And then the last untruth that the book is about is is the untruth of us versus them, that everything is a battle between us versus them, and trying to get out of this sort of like tribal mentality, and understanding that through all that is really this common humanity. And that's I think, really, really important message. So it's a good book. I'd highly recommend it. Jonathan Haidt his books seem to have some really deep thinking in them. So I enjoyed that one.
Nice. Thanks. I've been writing them down as you've been saying them. So I actually thought of a couple more questions, and I want to let you go, but I just have to know a couple of these things. Well, because yeah, I asked your – well, yeah, thanks. I asked Jared Robinson the same thing because, I mean, I haven't traveled a ton. I've been on a bunch of cruises and things like that, like when I was a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. But I haven't traveled kind of like you've been traveling and like Jared's traveled. What have you noticed has either been the same or different? Let's talk about even just students or cultures. I mean, you know, what you've taught in Houston or that area, you've taught in, you know, Texas, you've taught in Saudi Arabia, you've traveled. What have you, is there a common denominator between students or people or anything you can say that, you know, we all have this in common or not?
So, yeah. So, so recently I did a workshop in London, and it was a professional development. I'm sorry. It was a positive discipline workshop, and it was really, really good. And one of the key components of positive discipline is the idea that everybody has this need to feel belonging and significance. And I think that that's true across the board. And so, if that essential need is not met, then sometimes it manifests itself in misbehavior or acting out or, you know, something like that. So I think that is one thing that's common, especially with my students, right, that I've seen with my students in the U.S., in the school that I used to work in the east side of Houston, in the more affluent school that I worked at in Houston, and now here in Saudi Arabia, is that the kids need to feel this sense of belonging and significance and being able to contribute. And if that's missing, then that particular need is going to be filled with something else, or going to be attempted to be filled with something else. So I think that's definitely one thing that is true across the board. The differences are a lot, right? And a lot of those kind of come from the culture that the kids are coming from. And so, you know, I only deal with kindergarten right now, so it's a little bit different, but their culture determines the way they see certain things in a big way. And so my big challenge has been to figure out how to kind of balance, because I think there's 70 different countries that are represented just in the kindergarten, and in the whole school, in the whole like university and school system, there's something like 120 different countries represented on this campus. So it's this huge, you know, amounts of different cultural influence that affects all the decisions that are made, right, individually. And so in a sense, you have to create this third culture that says, okay, you might be coming from these different types of backgrounds, but here, you know, we all respect each other. Here we all, you know, try to have this belonging, this sense of belonging and significance. Here we're all trying to contribute, no matter where you came from, no matter what, you know, your background or culture is. And sometimes that's a little bit more difficult than others, especially, again, considering some of the background and cultures that the students might come from. So yeah, that's a pretty big challenge, but those are some fundamental needs that I think everybody has, and regardless of your culture, everybody is seeking some sort of sense of belonging and significance.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I can't, well, first of all, sorry, I have a few thoughts now. One of them is that I can't believe how many different cultures and countries your students come from. I mean, do they all speak English, your kids? Probably not, do they?
Yeah, they all speak English. Oh, they do. It's an English-speaking school. It's an English-speaking university. Obviously, some better than others.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing. So I was sitting, I was eating lunch with the kids the other day, a couple days ago, and I was sitting with a group of probably 10 kids, and in those 10 kids, there were 8 different nationalities around the room. So 2 of them were from New Zealand, and the rest of them were from Pakistan and Peru, and I mean just all over the world. There is 8 out of the 10 from different nationalities. It was amazing.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's
and it just everywhere. It's amazing.
Wow, that's great that you get to experience that. I think that's awesome. I really do. Mm-hmm. And your children get to experience that too. So that's awesome. It really is. It's a great thing. So I admire you for that. I really do. I admire you for taking that leap and into a different culture, totally different world. I mean, that's just amazing. So last two, ready? First one is what's next for you, or what's one of your goals for this year, or what's next for Jorge? How's that, project wise or just in general, teaching wise? What's your 2019 big picture look like?
Oh, that's a good question. what's next? I don't know. I often don't like, or maybe that's another thing I should work on. I don't like plan that far ahead, you know, I just kind of take things as they come. I know one thing with the podcast, I would like to, you know, talk to more authors and more, like professors and things like that, and kind of get their perspective on physical education and things like that. I want to do more of those round table discussions as we talked about, you know, right, for the podcast. That's kind of what I have in mind. I've had this idea of creating a website on the back burner for probably years now. And I have to do that at some point.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? What else would I like to do? As far as like school is concerned, one thing that I want to do more of is more closely align some of my planners with the classroom teachers and get that, you know, transdisciplinary idea going a little bit more in PE. Let's see, what else? As far as traveling, while I'm here in Saudi Arabia, I want to travel as much as I can. So that's, I guess, a family goal. Like, we want to really see, you know, the world and experience, you know, all these different cultures and different things around the world that we haven't thus far, you know. So yeah. I mean, for me, I never traveled. When I was in the United States and I was growing up, we didn't go anywhere. I mean, we would go to Mexico because we live so close and my parents are from Mexico. But other than that, the first time I left Texas was on a college track meet. We went to Louisiana, and that was the first time I left Texas. And so now we have this great opportunity, and so we definitely want to take advantage of that.
Love it. I think that's great. See, you didn't think you had any goals and big plans, and there you go. I made you think about that.
Yeah.
All right. So before I let you go, your final thoughts for the phys ed community. Any advice, any tips, any lasting words?
I think my final thoughts would be that I think physical education and being a physical education teacher, you have this huge potential to have this enormous influence and enormous role in our students' lives. And my advice would be to take that very, very seriously and really consider the things that you're doing in your class and try to maximize that positive influence that you would have on these students, because these students are the ones who are going to go on and be the decision makers of tomorrow. And if you can help them become the best version of themselves through physical education class and through understanding the importance of living an active and healthy lifestyle, then the decisions that they make for our society in the future are going to be more positive for more people. And I think we have a huge role in that. So I would just say, take that seriously.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And glad I got to talk to you. It's been a little bit, so I appreciate you and all that you've done for me and my career and helping me. You really have helped me a lot, and I really appreciate that. So thank you so much for being on my show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for inviting me. I really had a great time.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. All right, everybody, what'd you think? I just really appreciate Jorge for being on my podcast, as I appreciate what he puts out to the world with his podcast and all the content he puts out there to help other educators like myself and all of you out there. So thanks again for tuning in. You can catch me at supersizephysed.com and Jorge at physednow on Twitter. And every week or so, he puts out a podcast on the Global Phys Ed Voxcast. So please check that out. You guys are awesome. Take care. Here is a new beat for you.